Hello and welcome in to the Next Gen Podcast here on the Bluff City Media Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Bryson Wright, and I am joined by my co-host, Alex Winton. And we got another great show to get to today. We have to talk about the end of the FIBA World Cup because it was a surprising finish for a lot of people, including both of us. We're going to talk about that. And then we also got to talk about this new player resting policy that the NBA is going to be implementing this next season and talk about how it will affect the Grizzlies going forward. So let's get back to the FIBA World Cup. I know the last time we talked, it was going into the semifinals. Team USA and Team Canada, who we both were kind of thinking had a really good chance to be the gold medal game, both ended up losing their semifinals games to Serbia and Germany and ended up playing the bronze medal game. Before we get into this, congratulations to Germany and congratulations to Dennis Schroeder on winning MVP and everything like that. I think it was a cool scene to see him go back and then really get embraced by the fans in Germany. I thought that was pretty cool just from the outside looking in. Obviously still hope that Team USA could have pulled it out, but I mean, it definitely looks like it meant a lot to that country and a lot to the fans and everybody who came out to that. So I thought that was pretty cool. And shout out to Serbia too for really shocking a lot of people because Jokic didn't play. Once Jokic didn't play, a lot of people just kind of thought they just had no chance to do anything and they ended up being the silver medal team. So shout out to both of them. But everybody knows the biggest thing that you talk about when you come to this podcast, we got to talk about the Grizzly stuff. We got to talk about Jaren. So we got to talk about Team USA. And we got to talk about them not just losing, but not coming away with a medal. And I know going into this, there were a lot of people that had questions about the team. I had some questions about the team too, but I still think that they proved they had the talent to go further than they did. They ended up losing by two to Germany. That's a couple stops here and there. So it's not like they just weren't talented enough to go as far as they did. But it just really felt like down the stretch, the execution, whether it was players or coaching, like all together, just didn't really work together, I felt like. I don't know if there's really one person you can put all the blame on. I know a lot of people were putting some blame on Jaren, which I agree he does deserve some blame, not all of the blame, which we'll get into that too. But there's a lot of different people that, you know, made mistakes. And I think that it really just comes down to defensively, they weren't as good just top to bottom as they probably should have been, especially in those last couple games against Canada and against Germany, where they gave up some of the most points of anybody in the tournament in those games. And it was just really a struggle for them on defense. And I think that was surprising for a lot of people. And I also think they did have some issues with kind of the lineups they were running along with the personnel they had to kind of match up with some of these European teams that had two bigs or a team like Germany that plays both Mo and Franz Wagner along with Daniel Theis. And that's basically three people that are what, like 6'8", 6'9", 6'10". Like the Team USA really wasn't used to that. They played a guard heavy lineup, you know, smaller bigs and Paolo and Jaren who aren't really used to playing the five. So there was a lot of stuff like in terms of roster construction that I feel like as the tournament went on, the other teams like kind of figured that out. So I think that's why maybe in the exhibition games, it didn't seem as big of an issue, but it kind of seemed like as the tournament went on, teams looked at the film from the other games and found out the ways they could beat Team USA, whether it's being physical on the interior, whether it's playing multiple bigs and attacking the glass. Like that was all stuff that we saw a lot of. And then really attacking on the perimeter, getting a lot of three-pointers. I think that's what we saw from every team, you know, Lithuania when they won and Germany when they beat Team USA. They both hit some really big threes. So, yeah, there was a lot of stuff in those last two games.
Yeah, to start, I had to rewatch the games or really, you know, so I woke up to the scores and stuff. And to your point, when I woke up and saw like my first initial reaction to them losing to Germany, I looked at the score and looked at 113 points. Like defensively, like you said, that's just not good enough, especially for in a FIBA World Cup where you're basically, you don't have a longer game, like it's 10 minutes, you know what I mean? 10 minutes a quarter, like the games are shorter. So,
I think it's like really, giving up 113 in the length of a college game. So it's like, it's even worse, really, in that way.
Exactly. Crazy. So, I think it comes down to really mainly two or three things. Like you said, really mainly for me defensively, and then obviously the coaching and slash roster construction. Because I know people, said they were surprised that Team USA gave up this many points, which to a degree I get it. But when you really look at it and break it down, like sit with it, it really is not much of a surprise, because when you build your roster around a lot of smaller guards instead of actual wings and forwards, and then you expect to play a lineup with bigs that are not usually accustomed to playing the five, so you're basically playing small ball the whole time, it makes your margin of error a lot more slimmer. And that's basically what happened with them, is that their defense had to basically be perfect along with their offense just to even make up for the lack of size, where as it wasn't even all about the glass, but just having guys where they were bigger and could pick on guys like Austin Reeves, who's 6'5", and they could just get a bucket whatever when they were, because they play switching defense. And so if you're going to do that, they're just going to pick, you know, hunt mismatches. And that's basically what happened with them, especially during that Germany game, where obviously, you know, Jaren got a lot of blame for, which I'll get into in a minute. Like, you know, when you really look at it, just they couldn't guard anybody. Like, and they were hunting Reeves the whole fourth quarter. And so I just think, you know, again, it just showed up at the wrong time. And obviously the Canada game is what it was. I mean, obviously you can say they didn't, I mean, they could have won that game, obviously, but like Jaren didn't play, Brandon Ingram didn't play. I think like there was three or four people that didn't play. So I didn't really take too much of that game. But the Germany game, besides Brandon Ingram, everybody's available. So it was kind of like, you know, I think the roster construction could have been better. I think they could have been better in terms of looking for wings. Like, because you think about their wing position. I mean, Cam Johnson's like 6'8", 6'7", but he didn't play a lot. Brandon Ingram was out. So then that makes you, what, I think your tallest wing is Mikal Bridges. Everybody else was like 6'5", 6'6", or 6'5", 6'4", with your guards. But, and also you're bringing guards that are not really great defensively. Like, Tyrese Halliburton's never been a great defender. Jalen Brunson's never been a great defender. It can be a great defender, but he's inconsistent. So when your point of attack defense is inconsistent, that puts more pressure on your bigs to be perfect, which a.k.a. Jaren. And it's going to be easier, you know, for them to just get to wherever. And so that's why you might see a lot of clips where, you know, somebody's getting blown by and then Jaren has to help, but then that's leaving the big open because, you know, they're not helping the helper. So, you know, I think that's really on – really Kerr and Grant Hill to really fix that roster. And I mean, they will. Obviously, there's been reports about what's going to happen with, you know, their actual USA team. But I'm not really that worried, honestly, because, again, people got to understand. Like, first off, you know, they didn't medal. They did improve from last FIBA Cup. And I think there was a stat. Basically, they've only won, like, three FIBA Cups since, like, I think early 2000s. Like, they don't – FIBA, usually, they don't really care about. Like, stars don't really go to FIBA as much as they used to. So, you know, my thing is, until they – losing the Olympics, I'm not going to be too worried about it. You know what I mean? People could have played better. Coaches could have been better. I think Kerr could have made a few adjustments in terms of playing bigger lineups. I think he should have played Jaren and Paolo together, Jaren and Kessler together, see if that would have worked. Like, at least give it a try. I'm not saying it would have worked all the way, but at least, like, to not go to it is kind of crazy to me. But I kind of get it because that's what he's used to in his system. But, yeah, I'm not too worried. Obviously, it's a disappointing thing with them just because, you know, I expected them to get gold. But at the same time, I'm not too surprised when you really think about it, because defense is always going to be their Achilles heel to me. If they defend, they're going to beat anybody. But if they don't, they can lose. And that's literally what happens. So, but I mean, I think all these players are going to have, you know, they'll bounce back and stuff like that. Like, I'm not worried about anybody's play here at FIBA. Like, because there was some last thing. There were some people talking about stock dropping because of FIBA. Like, it's a totally it's different games. Like, players are going to be better in their actual teams and respective offenses and systems. Like, I'm not going to – like, players are going to be better. Brandon Ingram's not going to look like what he did during FIBA. Jaren's not going to look like what he did during FIBA. Jalen Brunson, like, all these guys are going to be, like, all-star level players this year. Like, so, yeah. But they'll be fine. But, yeah, I mean, it is disappointing, but at the same time, hey, it happens. You know what I mean? Like, it's not the first time they lost, and it might not be the last.
Yeah, the last thing I do say before we kind of move on to more like Jaren focused stuff is Dylan Brooks had 39 in the bronze medal game. I wish, I like, just seeing that and then seeing some of the highlights of it, like, dude, where was that in the playoffs, man? Like, we just needed that one game. One game. That's all we needed, man. We needed one game. And I just watching that, 39 points. I think he hit, what, like 7 3-pointers? And I was just like, man, where has this been? You know, but, you know, maybe it's the Grizzlies. Maybe just the Grizzlies have bad vibes or something, and he couldn't shoot the ball for the Grizzlies, and he can only do it again, you know, at FIBA for some reason. But, yeah, no, that was just – that was insane to watch that performance. Just after what happened in the playoffs, just like the drastic difference in how he played. And it's just crazy because just going like the last time you saw him was that playoff performance. And now to see how he played in FIBA, that's why the whole thing about does stock drop from FIBA? No, because it's just completely different. Like it's like an alternate reality where Dylan Brooks has 40 pieces in important games. Like it's almost like it's just a completely different place. But yeah, so we do got to talk about Jaren, though, because, like you said, there's a lot of people that have put a lot of the blame on Jaren. And like I said at the beginning of this, Jaren definitely deserves as much of the blame as anybody else does on the team. He did not do what the coaching staff asked of him, right? Like, it's that simple enough. He didn't do what the coaching staff asked of him. This coaching staff needed him to be a rim protector and also dominate the glass. Right, but Jaren has never been good, has never been a good rebounder, just overall. Paolo isn't a great rebounder either, just overall. I mean, he's good for his position, but he's not good enough to be the main guy in a thing like a FIBA tournament where you have to be the main rebounder and you're playing the five. Like, that's just not what he does. If anybody on the roster could have been that, it would have been Walker Kessler, just because he's more used to that. He's a better rebounder. But I think that just between him and Jaren, there's some things where it's like Walker Kessler does bring you rebounding, but he doesn't bring you as much spacing and stuff like that. So it's a little bit different. I would have liked to see them play Jaren and Walker Kessler together some, play Jaren and Paolo together some, just so there's another big out there, because I feel like there was a lot of times where you don't really have true wings or true kind of power forwards or any small forwards, really. I mean, you had Mikal, but it really felt like they were playing a lot of either guards or like big guards, because like Brandon Ingram, he's technically a forward, but he's basically just like a tall guard. You know, he doesn't really play like a forward. He doesn't bring a lot of forward stuff. So it's like when you really look at who's out there, you've got Jalen Brunson, you've got Josh Hart, you've got, you know, if there's Austin Reeves is playing out there, like all of the guys that you're coming in, even coming off the bench when it was Haliburton, whether it's Anthony Edwards, who obviously he was starting, but it's like all these guys that Jaren played with, whether they were starting or off the bench, were mostly either guards or big guards that really, like, rebounding is not really their thing either. So I think that was really the main issue, is they got killed on the glass. Like, they didn't bring anybody besides, I feel like, Kessler, maybe Bobby Portis, who is really like a above average rebounder. And I think that really did come back to bite them, just because I feel like that's such a big deal in FIBA games, because there's a lot more back to the basket play, a lot of more actual big men than you will see in an NBA game. So I think that really did come back to bite them. I think Jalen Brunson, not to say that he didn't play well, I think he played all right, but I feel like just the offense flowed a lot better when Haliburton was in the game. And I feel like if Jaren had played more with Haliburton, maybe he would have scored a little bit more in those games, just because I felt like in all the games when he played with Haliburton, he ended up scoring a lot more in his minutes with Haliburton than with Brunson, just because I feel like he was more searching for other guys a lot more. And I think that that's something that maybe – I think Jaren's the kind of guy that kind of when he starts the game, he has to get off to a good start. And if he gets off to a bad start, it can become a bad game very quickly. And I think they did a lot of that, like, in the exhibitions games, trying to get him going offensively. And I feel like they went away from that as the tournament went on. But he also took himself out of that by getting in foul trouble and stuff like that. So it's not just completely on the coaching staff. And it's not to say I'm making a bunch of excuses for him, because at the end of the day, Jaren had to be better, and he wasn't. So, but just there's a lot of other stuff that goes into it. So it's not just to say it's just his fault that they lost the games. I think there's a lot of people you could put the blame on. But yeah, he definitely takes some of it. And I mean, yeah, got to be better on the glass, and then got to stay out of foul trouble. But those are the two things that I think most people would say Jaren needed to work on 2 years ago. So it's like it's the same stuff he has to continue to get better at. He has gotten a little bit better. Obviously, you know, the fouls haven't been as bad. The rebounding has gotten better. But it's just like kind of taking that next step on both of those accounts as well.
Yeah, agreed. I remember seeing a tweet about the Jaren stuff because, again, I said it before and I say it again. He's one of the more polarizing players in this league. And I say it because, again, it's not about how he acts, about his game, because either people hate him or love him. Because I knew that because when I looked at the Germany game and people were talking about the game and they just showed his box score, I was like, all right, let me look at the game. And obviously he gets blamed. It's not me making excuses for him. But it's like I'm looking at the game and I'm seeing everybody else not playing defense just like him or not rebound. Like, it was a whole team thing. Like, I'm big. I always say blame pies. If we're going by blame pies, how much blame? Like, Jaren can get a good chunk of the blame, but I'd give that to the guards too and everybody else involved. Like, I don't think it's like a big – like, I wouldn't just put it all on him. He obviously had to be better. But, again, like you said, a lot of that goes to him, just some of it on him and some of it on the actual roster construction. You knew Jaren was a poor rebounder or inconsistent rebounder because he did just come off of having career high rebounds this year. And obviously, I think he averaged like 8-9 boards in the playoffs. So he can rebound. It's just very inconsistent. But at the same time, you have to build lineups around Jaren where it highlights his best stuff. So it's not ideal to have a lineup with 6-5 guys. And basically, I think the you're placing playing a power forward with 6-6 with Mikal Bridges at that time, the small ball. And he plays more of a combo guard than he does, like you said, like a dual forward. Like, they had no real, like, Jason Tatums on this roster, like, where you can play 3 and 4. You had one with Paolo, but he only played him at the 5, which is why I said I would like to see it. Because even though Paolo, he only had one season, I think he was a solid rebound. I think he averaged, like, 6 or 7 rebounds. And he's 6'10 and, like, 250. So it's like he would be able to rebound a little bit. And you'd be able to and he can move. So it's not like you're playing a guy that's slow footed. You have some versatility with size still, even though he couldn't shoot. So it's kind of like, you know, I think that could have been a solution. Obviously, offensively, I think I don't really worry about the offense. I just think he didn't get him, like you said, it didn't get as involved because teams just, you know, they didn't give him the ball as much. But also, like you said, like we talked about with fouls, like him taking himself out of the game. There's a couple games where, you know, our last three, really, he took himself out the game because of the foul trouble. So it's hard to really establish an offensive rhythm if you're going to be in foul trouble all the time. And you're already taking limited shots as well. Like, I don't think he had really a game where he took 10 shots. He's usually taking anywhere from, like, 3 to, like, 7 shots. So, you know what I mean? You got to make him count. He could have shot the ball better, too, but he didn't take a lot of threes. But, yeah, I don't think he was bad, per se. He wasn't good. But, I mean, I think he was good in spurts. You know what I mean? I think he was good to start, but obviously it tailed off as the last three games went on. But I feel like that's Team USA in general. Like, it just wasn't him, you know. And, again, I'm not trying to make excuses for Jaren because he could have been better. And if he was better, they might have changed their, you know, their fortunes might have been, you know, they had a different outcome. But I'm not, like, worried about Jaren. I mean, stuff like you said that happened, we already knew about. And in Memphis, we have time. We'll have a lineup to cover that. Like, we'll have lineups where we play an actual power forward next to Jaren, not just some smaller guard. You know, the only time we might have us play a smaller guard is if we're playing Golden State and they play small like that, and then we have to play super small, or another team plays super small, and we have that type of lineup to do that. But, like, now it's like, you know, I'm not really too worried about it. Like, again, Jaren got to be better, but I think it's a lot of it goes into it. Like, you know, like, Kerr has to be better and, you know, making a lineup that optimizes Jaren's skills. And that just didn't happen. I mean, obviously, you want to play him at 5, but you got to play him with an actual power forward who knows how to rebound or has size. You know what I mean? Or you got to play him with a point guard that's actually going to get him the ball and stuff like that. Like, and I can say that for other people on this roster. Like, this roster wasn't a clean fit, too, because Ingram has struggles, too, where Ingram couldn't find his spot. He had to go to the bench because Josh Hart was better as a guy that could be a role player versus Ingram, who needs the ball to have – or needs to have the ball in his hands to be successful, and he's not really a catch-and-shoot guy. So little stuff like that, I think, you know, he was, you know, Jaren and everybody, you know, some other people face those type of issues. So, you know, but ultimately, I mean, could have been better, but I mean, I'm not really worried. Like, you know, like I said, I'm not that person where it's like, you think your stock is gone. Like, I'm not, no. Like, I think people just want to get, again, it's easy to scapegoat Jaren because you look at the rebounding numbers, you say he's 7 foot, he should rebound better. But again, people don't use nuance and context. Yeah, people don't use nuance and context. You know, people love to go off of, you know, we'll see tweets where it says Jaren Jackson Jr. stats and not give any context to why the stats happen. You know what I mean? Like, I could do that with anybody. Like, we could do that with somebody like Ant and be like, oh, he went 1-for-7 in one game or whatever with no blanket, no context at all, and take whatever we could from that tweet. You know what I mean? So, like, I just think people forget to use nuance and context. But, I mean, hey, it happens. Like, especially with the Grizzlies, it's going to happen. Like that's just what it is. Like, at this point, we because of other stuff. I'm not going to get into all that, but just, like, you know, it's not always objective. But, I mean, yeah, Jaren will be fine. Team will be fine. Like, you know, Jaren's gonna come back this season and he's gonna be even better. Watch. I don't expect this FIBA thing to be like a trend. Like, I think he's gonna come in the regular season being ready to go. I just, you know, especially since he's just played basketball, he'll be in a rhythm, be in shape. So I expect him to start strong. So yeah, I expect Jaren to be good.
Yeah, definitely. And he's gonna be in a different role. Obviously, he's gonna be playing hopefully with Steven Adams. As far as we know, he's gonna be ready for the regular season. So that'll be something good. He'll be playing in a position he's more used to and everything like that. But last thing about FIBA, really not so much about FIBA, but they did qualify for the Olympics during this FIBA run. And one of the things we do got to talk about is the expectations for the Olympics in Paris next year. And people have basically been saying, it looks like Team USA is going to send the quote-unquote Avengers. Yeah, because we got LeBron, KD, Jason Tatum, Devin Booker, a lot of these guys have been saying that they have indicated that they want to go to LeBron or to somebody else, and there's reports of all this. There's a lot of players like that that are supposed to go. There's a chance that Desmond Bane gets on that team as like a bench player, which I think would be a very underrated addition. Obviously, I think he's going to get overshadowed a little bit by all of those guys if he does make the team. But I think that that's somebody who could be like a Grizzlies, from the Grizzlies standpoint, he could make it. And I think there is still a possibility Jaren ends up on the Olympic team, just because it's going to come down to what big men are healthy and what big men are actually going to play for Team USA. Like, I mean, there's been a question on, will Joel Embiid play for Team USA now that he does, like, he has USA citizenship and everything like that. So he could play for Team USA if he wanted to. But will he? Will he not? What's Bam Adebayo going to do? So there's a lot of other stuff that you're going to have to look at. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be Steph, LeBron, KD, Booker, Tatum. I'm expecting all those guys to go. I'm expecting Jimmy Butler. Like, a lot of the guys from the last team, along with – it's basically going to be like a greatest hits of the last, like, two or three Olympic teams, it kind of feels like. Minus Carmelo, obviously, because he is retired. But, you know, he had his great run with Team USA and everything. But I think that I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be cool. I'm excited to get for the roster to get officially finalized and kind of see who's really going to be ready to take on that challenge at the end of next season. But I think the expectations for now, I mean, you got to think that if they send those guys, they're going to get the gold medal like they have the last four times they've gone to the Olympics.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, again, like I said earlier, I don't worry about the Olympics with Team USA. Like, FIBA, sure, but, like, proof's in the pudding. They haven't lost an Olympics since, like, 2004. Like, this is proof. This is not me just saying whatever. Like, Olympic Games, they bring their best, usually. And even if they don't bring their best, they bring, like, the second best. So, you know what I mean? So, it's kind of like, I'm not really too worried. Like, I mean, yeah, like, I think LeBron, like, LeBron, Steph, KD, you're talking about like three top 10 players like in the league still right now. Obviously Tatum, AD, Draymond. And then again, I mean, if you're, you know, if we're talking about that, Bam, like I think some of the people from the last team will be there. I think there's people that could make it from this FIBA team, but it's only a few. I mean, I personally think Ant and Jaren are kind of, and I say Mikal Bridges, those three guys, just because they have, like, actual, like, I could say they have one or two skills that could really help Team USA, even in a limited role. Like, you know, Ant could be on that team and score some points and need, you know, if they need, like, a spark off the bench or something like that. Jaren can obviously defend, especially if you're playing with Anthony Davis and stuff like that. You know, you have another rim protector, especially even if he's not starting. And same with Mikal Bridges, he could be a 3-and-D guy, you know, a guy that you could put on the wing and he could switch and guard multiple positions so you can run that switch defense. So that's why I think those three will really be the ones. Obviously, I'm not saying that nobody else could, but those are the guys that stand out from that FIBA team that could possibly make the team. But they might not be on the team just because the team's stacked. Like, it'll be interesting to see. But I mean, just the net top names alone, I mean, yeah, like they'll win, bro. Like, this is Team USA we're talking about. I hate to sound like cocky, even though teams are getting better, like around the league or around the world, which as they should, that's great for the game, especially because that means, like, you know, like the game is becoming more global, which is great, in my opinion. But it's still, you know, we still got a lot of, like, we know who runs this in a way. Like, like the proof's in the pudding. And until that changes, like, until I see otherwise, I wouldn't think otherwise. Like, I expect them to win gold, like, especially with the roster they're talking about getting. Like, come on, bro. Steph, KD, and LeBron on the same team? I mean, I don't think we've seen. I'm trying to think. I mean, maybe we saw it in an All-Star game, but I can't recall when all three was on the same team. So they all on the same team?
Yeah, because that was something we were talking about before this. Steph has actually never played on an Olympic team because he was hurt in both 2016 and 2020. So he was not on either one of those teams. I mean, obviously, I think he would have made either one of those teams if he was healthy. And I think that's something that's going to be interesting to see how he plays in that after this next season. I mean, they're all getting a little bit older. So I think that might be a little – it was a little surprising for me to see LeBron and KD. Not so much Steph, just because I feel like that's something that he does want on his resume. It's just – not to say that his resume needs it, but I think just something to say, you know, he was a gold medalist or he played in the Olympics for Team USA, which is just something he hasn't gotten to do yet. So I had a feeling Steph would be there, but to hear, like, LeBron and KD sign on again at their age, I think that's really cool to see them kind of recommit to the team and everything. And yeah, I mean, like you said, not to be cocky or anything, it's not going to be easy. I don't think they're going to go out there and win every game by 60. I mean, I think they're going to win a lot of the games by a good amount, but you know, it's the rest of the world is obviously catching up. We saw that by FIBA. But I still think that when Team USA sends their best players, they're going to have the best team. And, I mean, that's just what history has showed us, you know, over, like, since the Redeem Team, basically. But, yeah, kind of moving on to the last thing that we are going to talk about before we end the show today is the NBA's new resting policy. Because I just thought this was something really interesting, because I feel like it kind of came out at a weird time. It's kind of in the middle of, like, no man's land for NBA stuff right now. And if you would hear something like this, you would have expected it to be something that would come out like when they release a new collective bargaining agreement. But this is not something that has to be put into the collective bargaining agreement, because all of the fines of this new policy are going to go on the team. So that was something that was a little nuanced thing. So this is something the NBA has just thrown in randomly kind of at this time of the year, and it just got approved. So basically, for every NBA team, you cannot rest more than one quote-unquote star player for each game. So for the Grizzlies, like, star player, it is categorized as somebody who's made an all-star team or all-NBA team the last three seasons. So for the Grizzlies, Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. cannot both rest in the same game. And those are extremely important for and they're going to be a lot more strict on, you know, national TV games and also road games. National TV games, obviously, because I think this is something that's coming from ESPN, TNT, and the people that are paying these really big TV contracts. And then they feel like they're not getting the full extent of the NBA, because when they have these big matchups, it's a lot of times there'll only be one team that's playing their stars, and the other team, it kind of seems like it might be a throwaway game. And I think that's something they're trying to get away from. There's going to be fines, and especially big fines, like I said, on road games, on national TV games, and then games that count toward the new in-season tournament. All of those are going to have heavier fines, and they're going to be really going to be cracking down on those more than anything. But just all in all, it's kind of an interesting thing. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think that, like, is there an issue with the amount of time that players are resting? Yes, but I'm not sure if fining the teams and doing it this way is necessarily the best way to go about it. Not to say that I know exactly what the best way to go about it is, and I understand that from the NBA standpoint, it's about making their money and making sure that when they have the next TV contracts coming up, they can show this to the TV deals and say, hey, you know, we listen to you. We have more players playing more games. I mean, this is also one of the reasons why they added the 65 game cutout for all NBA and stuff like that, which honestly, I thought that that was possibly going to be enough for some of the guys, just because a lot of that goes into contract stuff. But it still might be for a guy like Kawhi and Paul George and LeBron and some of these guys that are older, which there is also another little thing where if you're over the age of 35, you can kind of get a little bit more leeway, just because they also know that you do have to rest a lot more once you get to that age. So guys like LeBron, Mike Conley, who is affected by this because he made the All-Star team. I think Chris Paul is another one that's going to be affected by this, but is probably going to get a lot of leeway because he's older. But yeah, I just think it's kind of interesting. I like the idea of it. I like the idea behind it, especially the not resting in away games, just because I feel like there are so many times where people might save up just to go to one game because maybe they live in Milwaukee and they're a Bucks fan, but they really wanted to see Steph, or they really wanted to see the Grizzlies and wanted to watch Ja play. And it's a night where Ja doesn't play, or Steph doesn't play, or they're trying to see LeBron and LeBron doesn't play. And it might be their only chance to see him that entire season. So I understand why they put an emphasis on that. But yeah, I think it's going to be a good thing. And I think at the end of the day, it's going to, like, obviously it's going to have more people playing more games, which will just make the regular season more exciting than it already was. And I think it also will continue to kind of, I feel like the NBA has definitely been trying to push that the regular season is not going to seem as, not to say meaningless, but it feels like there are stretches that don't mean as much just because nobody's playing, people are playing every other night, stuff like that. And I think they're trying to get away from that. And I think they've put all of these things into place to where this next upcoming season, you'll definitely see a big difference in the competition levels of the teams that you're going to be playing on a nightly basis. And you're going to see a lot less games where you're playing a team like the Clippers and there's no Kawhi and PG, or the Lakers without LeBron and AD. They're at least going to have at least one of those guys on any given night.
Yeah, I'll say about the resting idea, I think the idea is good in theory, right? Like, I think it's a good idea in theory. But I will say, I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit. It's like they can just potentially say, hey, instead of saying it's a rest day, they could just say it's a real injury. You know, and how would the team or the people that are, you know, tracking this know the difference in that? You know what I mean? So I really think that's probably the one pushback I'd give on that, because it's like, man, they could just do that. But at the same time, like you said, I think the 65 game thing is kind of going to change some things. And in the sense of people are going to want to play, like guys are going to want to make all NBA and make All-Star and really get those awards, not really All-Star, but just to get those awards, especially to meet the criteria for that. So, you know, I do think, you know, it'll work a little bit. I mean, I think the Grizzlies kind of, I'm not gonna say they followed this to a degree last year, but they did, in the sense of you rarely saw them rest two star players. Usually the actual player was hurt. Cause I remember going to that back to back and they rested Bane one game, but he wouldn't go under the thing. But I think Jaren and Ja played the back to back. But and now going forward this year, if they have a back to back, one of the two got to play instead of, you know, both of them can sit. So, you know, I think that's pretty, you know, it's interesting in a way, because I do think, like, again, I think how many players, it's like 49 players are affected by this. So, you know, some of them will matter for, some of it won't, you know, it'll be different for each player and, you know, their situation to their teams. But, I mean, I think it's a decent idea. I just don't know if the execution is going to be great, just because I think people are still going to rest and have rest days, because ultimately with the new CBA, they didn't get rid of back-to-backs or eliminate a lot of back-to-backs. So with that, some teams are going to rest on back-to-backs, including the Grizzlies. Like, it's just what it is. I'm not saying they're going to not play back-to-backs, but, like, they're going to use one or two of the back-to-backs in the regular season and say, hey, you're going to rest. Like, they're going to do that still. Like, it's just going to happen, because you still got too many back-to-backs for how the game is played now and the amount of talent and the pay. Like, it's – They're gonna rest. But again, now it's just trying about limiting the rest. That's what they're trying to do. Especially like you said, for the road games and, you know, people trying to see star players during those games. They're trying to, you know, appease the fans to some degree. And you know, and obviously the players, and making sure they're, you know, following what they need to do from a contract standpoint. But yeah, I mean, I think it'll be cool. You know, I don't know how much of an effect it'll have. You know, we might not even notice it for real. You know what I mean? It's kind of like with the play-in tournament, or not play-in tournament, but the in-season tournament, how basically, you know, it's in the season, but like it, we might not even really notice it in like outside of maybe one extra game. So, you know, it might be one of those situations, but we'll see. You know, the NBA makes a lot of new changes, and you just kind of have to wait and see how it kind of progresses, because we could talk about it all day about what it'll do. But, you know, until we actually see it play out, you know, we don't really have too much to say about it. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. But, yeah, you know, I don't think it'll affect the Grizzlies that much. Like, we got young players. Yeah. Like, yeah, we got 24-year-olds. We got a 25-year-old and two 24-year-olds as our best players. Like, they're going to play. Like, I'm not worried about them not playing a back-to-back all the time. Like, they're going to play. They might have a rest day here too, but they're going to play. Like, I'm not worried. This is more for, like, older teams, like you said. They have a little bit of leeway, you know, like Golden State, Los Angeles. Like, those type of teams are a little bit older. So it might affect them a little bit more, but, like, yeah. Like, for us, I'm not really. I bet it probably won't even – like be a thing in my mind when I think about it, for real. So as the season goes on,
like for me, I think it's gonna have an effect, but it'll be more like you'll end up like, I feel like every time that the Grizzlies have played the Clippers over the last two seasons, they have never played them fully healthy. Like either Kawhi doesn't play, Paul George, like it'll be stuff like that, and I think you'll notice it in games against certain teams that have a lot of like rested and stuff like that in their history. You'll notice that you're actually going to have to play Kawhi and Paul George, you know, fully healthy. Whereas for the last two seasons, a lot of teams haven't had to do that because at least one of them is resting, if not both of them. So I think that's something that you'll see. And I think you'll see the same thing with like teams like the Lakers, the Warriors. The Warriors did a lot of it last year, especially, you know, Klay coming back from injury and stuff like that. So I think that'll be something else. I mean, you could even go into, I think they mentioned it in one of the articles where the Warriors have played all their guys and they went on the road on a back-to-back and they set Steph, Klay, and Draymond, and that's just not going to be allowed next season, and they're going to investigate that and probably get fined for it. But there's a possibility you might see some teams just take the fines too. Not to say that that's something that I think they're going to want to do, because obviously they want the money, but there'll be some teams that might just take the fines in certain situations. And then just to be clear, this obviously does not apply to real injuries. You know, if you're actually hurt there, they said that now the NBA did say they might have second opinions and have NBA doctors instead of just team doctors come and make sure that these guys are not faking injuries or something just to be rested. And another thing is at the end of the season, they're still going to be like, if you've already locked up your playoff spot, you can rest your players. Like, it's not going to be stuff like that at the end of the season. But you also won't be able to see stuff like where the Trailblazers last year were just like, we're out of the playoffs, so Damian Lillard is not going to play the last 11, 12 games of the season. That's not going to be allowed anymore. If Damian Lillard is healthy, Damian Lillard is playing, all that kind of stuff. So that, I think it's going to be like little stuff. So I think the bigger thing you'll notice will be probably more near the end of the season. You're not going to get as many of these, oh, this team is tanking, so we're definitely not going to see Damian Lillard tonight, or we're definitely not going to see Bradley Beal tonight. I think that's going to be where it's going to have the biggest change. And I think it might have an effect on the standings at the end of the season a little bit, just because there's going to be less of those like kind of cupcake games, just because everybody's going to be playing. But yeah, I don't think it's going to affect the Grizzlies that much. Obviously, they have two players that are technically affected by this. But like you said, last season, there weren't many games for both of them where both of them miss games. And since it doesn't affect the rest of the team, I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. One thing that they did also mention was, because I know you mentioned the thing about how instead of resting, they're going to say players might just be injured. Like I said, the NBA might investigate that, but they're also going to crack down on one of the things I've been talking about the last couple of years is the soreness epidemic in the NBA. The soreness epidemic, man. Because everybody is just sore all the time. And it's insane how sore these people are. And it's just like, it'll be randomly where, knee soreness, he's out tonight. And it's like, they're going to be cracking down on that too. You're not just going to be able to say, oh yeah, he has knee soreness. Which, I mean, in some situations, maybe they do. But I feel like a lot of the time, that just has taken the place of, this is load management or rest day.
That happened in a game I went to with the back to back, because BC had like, I think, like hip soreness, and he didn't play the one game. I think he played the first game against New Orleans, second game against Sacramento, he didn't play because of hip soreness, quote unquote hip soreness. I mean, that's what they said.
I'm telling you, it's an epidemic across the NBA. I've never seen more sore people than in the NBA, man. Like, it's an epidemic. You can go any team. It might be 15 minutes before the game. Damian Lillard, right leg soreness, out. Like, it happens all season. Like, the Grizzlies do it as much as any other team. And the real thing is I feel like there are some teams that do it, and it's not even, like, the star players that are always resting. Like, I feel like the Grizzlies had players that had soreness for a lot of the year that wouldn't even be affected by this. Like you said, for Brandon sure. Clark. Desmond Bane had some of that, but Desmond Bane, I feel like it was more his return from injury. Jaren had some of that early in the season because he didn't play back-to-back at the beginning of the season. But you can also – the NBA also – like, there's a lot of little stuff. I think when this first came out, a lot of people were like, oh, how are they going to do this? What if somebody's hurt? What if just, like – the NBA said that, obviously, if somebody tore their ACL last season, they're not going to be like, why are you resting on a back-to-back? But they will say, if it's a back-to-back and one of them's a home game and one of them's an away game, rest a home game. If one of them is on national TV and one of them isn't, you should play the national TV game and not the non-national TV game. Like, that's the kind of stuff the NBA is more worried about. And I think on that standpoint, that's going to also have an effect, because I think that's something you've seen. But yeah, I think it's going to affect a little bit of the soreness epidemic. It's going to affect who's going to rest what back-to-back and everything like that. But I don't know. I think it's going to have a positive effect, but I don't know if it's going to be something that people are going to be thinking about all throughout the season until somebody actually gets fined or it actually starts affecting the teams.
Yeah, it's just funny, man. Like you said, soreness epidemic is a thing that's happened, especially the last 2 years, man. Like I said, bro, I saw BC on the report and said it. The hip soreness, I mean, especially BC. If we're talking about like soreness, king of soreness for at least the Grizzlies, last 2-3 years, or basically his whole tenure, ever since like his second year, that's all you'll see BC off the list for. But so before this Achilles, obviously, be like hip soreness, leg soreness, back soreness. I'm like, man, what? Like you said, man, what all the soreness? I be sore. I'm sore every day. Like, you know what I mean? Like, what we doing, man?
Alex, now you too young to be sore every day, man.
No, man. Listen, I get it. But my point is, man, listen, I don't know what these soreness, they're gonna have to basically make sure they're gonna have to go into the depth. They're gonna have to stop being vague. Cause I mean, they're gonna crack down on it, obviously, but it's just funny, man. The soreness epidemic, we'll see how long it lasts, man. I mean, I mean it might cut it down, but then they might just use a different way to language it as versus like, you know, soreness. Like, they might use a whole different word
for it. I think my favorite one is return from injury management. I think that's my favorite one. Yeah, I think they're not going to change that one, which they're also going to be. I think that's the one they're going to use the most. If somebody turns their ankle, they're going to be like, yep, we're using that the rest of the season. That's why he can't play the back-to-back. Remember when he sprained his ankle 7 months ago? You're going to see a lot of stuff like that. But as always, I just want to say I appreciate everybody who listened to this week's episode of the Next Gen Podcast here on the Bluff City Media Podcast Network. For my co-host, Alex Winton, I'm Bryson Wright, and we'll see y'all on the next episode.